Greetings. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever else you want to call it. Feel free. Don't get censored by the PC police here. But we've got a great show tonight. We've got Michal Ledwith, and Michal's been a good friend of ESETI. He comes out at all the major events, and he'll be out at the next July 4th weekend conference as well. And he's he put out some DVDs called Deep Deceptions, and it was How Jesus Became the Christ 1 and 2, and The Orb Project is one of his books, and his latest book is Saving Jesus, and in his own words, he said somebody had to do it. So we've gotten so many misperceptions about the life of Jesus, and it's about time we have a researcher that actually is bringing out the truth. And Michal has access to all the information. He used to be an advisor to the Pope, and so he's got access to information none of us all have, you know. So let's, I think it'd be great to cover just, you know, the truth about the life of Jesus and kind of dispel a lot of the other programs that they're running. So anyway, without any further ado, Michal Ledwith, are you with us?
I'm with you, James, and very honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. There's so many crazy things going on and misperceptions about the life of Jesus. And I know, too, is whenever you do spiritual work or whatever else, if you don't act exactly like that image, you know, if you don't wear, you know, white robes and sandals and talks and these and thous, you know, people will come after you and discredit you and everything else. And I think it's so important to set the story straight on just who Jesus was.
Yes, indeed it is. You know, speaking of, you mentioned there that I was an advisor to the Pope, but I was speaking at a conference one time in the south of France a few years ago. And some guy came up after the talk and he said, I hear you were an advisor to the Pope, is that correct? And I said, yes. He said, you don't seem to have done a very good job.
Well, I don't think you listen to anybody.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, you know, given what you said there, James, about the deep-seated insecurities people have about what they're supposed to believe in. And, you know, I think I said I had a talk last night, and I said to someone that if Jesus were to come back today, the people who would oppose him and kill him would be probably the Christians. That's always the way when, you know, a great teacher comes along and people get a sort of warped version of what he was talking about, and then they go off with their own understanding of it. And if they're corrected on it, then there's a tremendous insecurity because they feel their whole eternal destiny or something is being threatened. So they react in a very instinctual and non-rational way. But that's been happening since time immemorial. So we shouldn't be surprised if it happens again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking if Jesus were to appear in a light ship or something, you know, and teleport down, you know, everybody probably calling the Antichrist or
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. It's happened time and time and time again.
Yeah. Well, if he was...
Go ahead.
Well, I just think about it, you know, he stood for truth and honesty and could heal people, you know, with consciousness, and, you know, almost everything that he stands for would be against the status quo, you know, the war on disease profiteers and everything else. And the people that are capitalizing on the external God, you know, that, go between. So it's obvious if he were to come back again today, he would, you know, meet the same fate as many of people that actually are walking his path.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, there was an odd thing. One of the earlier incarnations of Jesus was a Zoroaster. Mm-hmm. And when Jesus was coming back at about the age of 29 from his meetings with the masters of the Far East in Tibet, and he was passing through Persia, the Zoroastrian priest tried to kill him. it's an odd turn of fate, you know, to see this kind of thing happening, that the very system you yourself set up is about to destroy you now in another setting. So we've a lot of learning to do. The thing that really struck me, James, is if you peel away, you know, the ways of thinking about Jesus that we've got used to, principally the worst possible one, which is that Jesus Christ is a suffering Savior who came here to die for my sins. I mean, I'm tired saying to people that this, not alone is this not the most accurate and central description of Jesus, it's actually a blasphemy, and it's essentially an atheistic position, because what kind of God would be behind that sort of setup? You know, God got annoyed after a certain length of time and, so to speak, drew a line in the sand and said, somebody has got to pay for all the ways in which I've been offended. And because there was so much offense involved, no ordinary person could do it, I suppose. And God decided that his only son, innocent and so on, should be the one to come down here and die the most cruel death imaginable. To do what? To appease a God who appears in a very unfavorable light. When you ask what kind of God could that be to do that, he would have to be obviously fickle, capricious, vindictive, psychotic and neurotic and insecure. So, I mean, that is an atheistic position that people are saying that Jesus was their suffering Savior who came to die for their sins, because the kind of God lying behind that structure obviously could have no claim to be the Creator. That's the source of everything. Well, but, of course, you can't say that. As you said, you know, you'd be killed if you say that.
Yeah, I know. I know a few people here would like to barbecue me in my neck of the woods.
Because you're not alone, though.
Yeah, speaking of barbecues, there's a couple other things. You know, throwing your children into hell, you know, to everlasting fire and suffer eternally. You know, and then going, marching into cities and killing all the men, women, and children, even the animals. And salting the fields, you know, innocent children bashing their heads out on rocks. You know, you hear these stories and you just go, what kind of a God would do that?
Exactly. So obviously that is not who God is. But, you know, unfortunately, these are the perversions of belief that are so prevalent everywhere. You know, sometimes people ask me, when is the second coming of Jesus Christ? And I said, if you were Jesus Christ and you saw the mess that has been made of what he taught when he came, once is enough, and he's not coming back again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't. I mean, until you really think about it, even in the mental planes before he gets here, everybody's focusing on him on a cross, you know, nailed to a cross, suffering, and, you know, make the people projecting that image on him. You know, what would that do to him on his way in? You know, like...
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Expecting more of the same.
Yeah. I would skip that altogether. I would hit that image and all that energy, and I'd say, oh, I think I'll try the Pleiades or some other advanced civilization.
Yes. You might have a better chance there. But as you know, the Quran, the Muslim Quran, says that Jesus did not die on the cross, and there's... a reasonable case to be made that he didn't die on the cross. He did ascend. He's an ascended master, so I'm not diminishing Jesus in any way by that. But unfortunately, all of this focus on suffering, guilt, sinfulness, and the need to make reparation to an insecure God, that is a dreadful, dreadful deviation from the truth. And it's entirely disempowering of the human person. I mean, Jesus came here to teach us one thing, if you wanted to sum it up in a single sentence. He came here not to teach us how to create in the quantum field, because everyone is creating. Whoever lived and ever will live are already creating in the quantum field. But there, as I point out in the Saving Jesus book, you know, we have an awful lot of subconscious, powerful, disempowering programs in us. And you're trying to achieve something positive until we've dealt with those programs is like trying to fill a bath while leaving the stopper out. Everything is just drained away. Jesus didn't come here to suffer and die. He came here to teach us how to change what we're creating in the quantum field. So that instead of the misery and the suffering and the misfortune and all that, we do something else. I have a section, a chapter in the book, which is called Praying, the best way to make sure you do not get what you want. Because, you know, people forget what Jesus said: when you pray for something, believe it is already yours. But what do? When we pray, we believe it is not already ours, because we beg God, oh dear God, please send me enough money to pay the mortgage this month, or heal my daughter from incurable cancer or something. So we're already proclaiming that we do not have what it is we wish to accomplish. And when Jesus said, you know, believe it's already yours, he meant that we must have an absolute laser focus that whatever we are looking to manifest, that it is already ours, and then it will be so. But you never hear that preached, and that's probably the most important thing that Jesus ever said. He also said in connection with that, you are all gods. You know, they tried to stone him for that. You're all gods. And all the wonders that I am doing, you will do, and greater. We never hear that either, needless to say.
I always say, what happens when the children of God grow up, you know? And was it, was it Meister Eckhart? I like what he said. I think he said if, you know, if nut seeds produce nut trees and pear seeds produce pear trees, what do God seeds produce, you know? And I think they killed him too. And I'm not sure. I don't think he lasted too long either.
Oh God, yeah. Well, he didn't have a very happy existence for sure.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. The you know, one thing I always got, man, I see people, they'll condemn, you know, everything and condemn people and because they don't behave in a certain way or this or that. But one of the things I see all the time is condemning the food, you know, that they're eating, and it's not organic, it's not perfect, it's not this or it's not that. And I always go back to what Jesus said when he said, you know, it's not what goes into the mouth that defiles a man. And it's, you know, it's the thought about it and the, and you know, you're speaking the word about it from that negative thought. And people need to re-back up and just bless the food and be grateful for food they do have. And,
exactly.
I know so many people that are food Nazis right now. They're dying. They're dying very early, and it's amazing. And I'm going, God, these people ate, you know, pristine. They were so careful on everything they ate, and you know, and now they're dying of cancer. What the heck, you know?
I know. Yes, I had a good friend of mine this year, who was, you know, just early middle age, and was always extremely careful about everything. Everything was organic, et cetera, et cetera. Cancer, gone, dead now.
Yeah.
You know, in his early 40s.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've seen over and over, you know, all the doctors that wrote those diet books, and you have to eat this diet and that diet, they seem to all be dead. You know, they died. You know, they wrote books on heart, you know, how to heal your heart, you know, and they die of a heart attack.
And, oh, God. Yeah. It's, if it wasn't so sad, it would be very amusing.
Yeah. But I, you know, I look at that and I go, wow, I it all goes back to one thing. Whatever they focus on, they manifest. If they focus on heart disease, they're going to go that way. If they have fear of it, they're going to manifest that. And I read a book written by somebody was channeling Mary, and she was saying, like, universal peace will not come through religions or governments, but through the hearts and minds of the people. And I see over and over, it's all comes back to people waking up in consciousness.
Yes, yeah. You know, and as you connected with what you say there, we find it enormously easier to accept doom and gloom and powerlessness than we do the positive sides of things. So that's why we accept that, and therefore it manifests in our lives, and we wonder what the heck went wrong, or why is God punishing me, when of course God has nothing to do with it. It's myself.
Yeah,
we're our own jailers, you know, in this system down here. We have basically set up an entirely negative system of suffering, guilt, unworthiness, and fear, and we somehow have got the idea that to proclaim myself a worthless sinner is somehow or another pleasing to God or to Jesus, when nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even frequency-wise, like love and joy and bliss are the highest frequencies, and when you perpetuate, you know, fear, guilt, and unworthiness, you're actually lowering the frequency of people and actually keeping them enslaved. And you know, when it goes back to physics, you look at it and you go, boy, that's, you know, the churches that do continuously, you know, push the fear, guilt, and unworthiness programs are really anti-Christ consciousness.
Oh, they absolutely are. No doubt whatsoever about it. And, you know, on the matter of love and the frequency that we're in, I mean, the frequency that's coming from the Creator that produced everything that exists, Jesus had a word for that. The word in the Greek text, I mean, the text of the New Testament as we have it is in Greek, even though, obviously, Jesus and the apostles didn't speak Greek. And if you read the New Testament in Aramaic, which is the language they did speak, a lot of the things that are translated in the Greek are not accurate. Like, for example, even the Our Father, you know, it's not an address in Aramaic to the Father. And it's not talking about heaven as a sort of cosmological place somewhere up there. It's a permeation of throughout the entire universe. So the words of Jesus, you know, as we have got them, are already pretty much distorted by the fact that we're put down in Greek, and of course between 70 to 90 years after they happened. So we obviously have a lot of house cleaning to do to get facts straight on Jesus.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I read the prayer, you know, the prayer in Aramaic versus the one that we're given, and it's totally different, you know.
Totally different, yes.
Yeah, like, I think they refer to the Father as the cosmic birther of all things or something like that. Or,
right, yeah.
I can't remember, but it's totally different,
you know. But, you know, the word, in, for example, the word for love, which you and I are saying now today, is the energy that permeates the whole universe. And if I ever want to manifest something, I have to be in the flow of that energy. Now, mm-hmm. that's what we have in the New Testament in English, is what we call love. You know, English is a very poverty-stricken language in terms of having a vocabulary for love. There's only one or two words in English, whereas in Greek and in Aramaic, there's probably 40 different words for love. And I remember that famous incident when Jesus, near the end of his mission, had come in from the lake, from fishing, and they had he had a campfire prepared. This was after the kerfuffle when he had been arrested in Jerusalem. And he had a campfire prepared, and he asked Peter, who was the chief of the apostles, he asked him, "Do you love me?" And Peter said, "Yes, I love you." And then later on, 10 minutes later, he asked him, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter said, "Yes, Lord, I love you." And then he asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" And Peter said, "Yes, I love you." That's what comes across in Greek, in English, but it's not what Jesus said. If you look at the Aramaic text, say the Peshitta, which is a very, very ancient document in Aramaic, he's using different words for love. The first time he asked me, "Do you love me with agape?" Say the Greek text, God is agape, as it says in Greek. So, are we in the flow of that love for everything that exists? That's just what he asked Peter. Do you love me with agape? And then Peter replied, and you can see this in the Greek text, not with the same word. He said, yes, and he uses the term of another kind of love, like sort of, if you like somebody, you know, casually, do you like? And Peter replied, yes, I like you. And then he asked him again, do you love me with agape? And Peter says again, yes, of course I love you with agape. And then the third time, Jesus realizes that Peter can't make it, and he says, do you like me, Peter? And Peter says, yes, I like you. So in other words, the whole message of that text is not some exasperation of Jesus repeating the same thing to Peter three times. He's asking him different things each time. He sees that Peter is not able to rise to that level, and then he just settles for the minimum. Yeah, you like me, so that's good. So a lot of that kind of stuff, as you've just said there now, you know, is very different, even when you read it in, say, the Greek originals that we have, or more so in the Aramaic originals. Mm-hmm. Very different message.
Now, the beginning, like in the beginning, I know that you translated that completely differently than it's written because of the missing, I guess, of the way the vowels were missing or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how you did it, but maybe you could cover that as well.
Now, tell me a little more. I'm sort of lost there.
In the real translation, it says, in the beginning, the fathers of all fathers created the gods who created the heavens and the earth.
This is in the book of Genesis, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, sorry. I was finishing. Yeah, the convention in Hebrew was always, if you're dealing with a book that is talking about beginnings of things, like Genesis is talking about the beginning of the whole creation, the convention was that you began with the first letter of the alphabet. Now, Genesis begins with the second letter of the alphabet, corresponding to our B. So the first verse of Genesis in Hebrew reads, Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz, which means in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But if you were to put back, I remember one time I published an article and I said, just for fun, I'll put in the first letter of the alphabet, which is what you would expect to be there. And instead of in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, the addition of that single letter changes the whole meaning, because what it says now is Abba Rashid, which means the father of the beginnings created the heavens and the earth. So it's an entirely different meaning, and obviously somebody sometime wanted to change that meaning.
Mm-hmm. And it always seems to go back to plural, like Elohim is plural for God. A single God.
No, there's an abundance of literature about, for example, I was talking a bit last night about King Solomon and the Song of Songs and so on, but there's an abundance of literature as to who was the entity, in fact, that Solomon and David and so forth were relating to, and it seems pretty blatant to me that they were relating to Jehovah, who is not the creator God. And that again, is another kettle of or a can of worms that could be opened up. Because, again, you know, if you look sometimes at the Old Testament and the list of atrocities that are attributable to God, you know, from murdering children and God knows what else and wreaking vengeance on people and so on, I mean, God, as pictured there, is more close to being a war criminal than to be the source of all that exists. Mm-hmm. And this, unfortunately, I think, is what kind of being some of those big figures of the early tradition were relating to. That's the kind of person they were relating to. They were not relating to the Creator God.
Yeah, I agree. I believe that in the Jewish tradition, Jehovah, they call him Jehovah the Terrible, and you couldn't even mention his name without getting stoned or killed.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, in the Hebrew Bible, when they wrote it down first, there are no vowels in God's name. It's written just with consonants, and it's, let's say, in English transliteration, it's YHWH, and nobody knows how to pronounce it because you were never allowed to speak it. Now, the interesting thing is that what the Jewish people are allowed to use as a name for God is Adonai. But I did, to my own amusement one time, I took the vowels of Adonai and put them into the YHWH. And what do you get? You get Jehovah. Mm-hmm. So Jehovah was not the creator God. I mean, if we talk about the origins of the human race, say, with the Anunnaki 255,000 years ago, he was one of those entities there. And, of course, they very successfully passed themselves off as gods. Those are the ones who engineered our species. Mm-hmm. Some of them loved their creation, and others of them did not. And I'm afraid that the latter gentleman was in the latter category, too.
Yeah. I know. I noticed that there's a lot of misinformation out there because everybody's saying Jehovah's reptilian and this and that. And I said, well, these were the bearded gods. You know, even the Greek gods, the Egyptian gods, they all were bearded gods. And they had either red hair or light hair, or green eyes or blue eyes. And
R-H to negative O.
Yeah, and they had cone heads, basically, a lot of them, and they're very tall, you know, very large beings, and so
yeah.
I think that reptilian thing goes back to, from my understanding, was Marduk, actually, who was one of the Anunnaki, one of the sons. Was it Enlil or Enki? I can't remember which son.
There were two of them, Enlil and Enki, yeah. Minhursag then was the female geneticist who actually combined Anunnaki DNA with the DNA of a previously existing species, probably Homo erectus. There was by the way, James, there was a very interesting article in Discover magazine a couple of years ago. They have done a lot of work now on the history of our race through DNA sampling. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating article. It's May of 2012 or 2011, but it's well worth laying your hands on if you could read it. So they were able to trace where the origin of the species originally came from, and there was some intermingling with previously existing creatures here. So the human race is a quite complicated structure now if you analyze all the elements that go in to make it up, and obviously using the DNA techniques which weren't available, you know, in years past, they're able to get a much more complete picture of how the race originated in Africa and how it combined with other entities through various couplings to produce the races we have today. It's a very fascinating article, and I think they're continuing along that line of research still.
Yeah, where was that article again?
It's in Discover magazine.
Okay.
And now, speaking off the top of my head, I think it was May 2011. I'll check that with you and get back to you to see the accurate issue of it.
Yeah, my nephew worked on the genome experiment, and he's like an MD doctor or everything. He's brilliant. But he said there's so much alien DNA that there's no way that, you know, we all evolved, crawled out of the ocean and came from one.
Oh no.
Yeah. So that just doesn't add up, and just different degrees of DNA, like mix, not just mixes of DNA, but there's some very, you know, some people walking around with some very advanced DNA, and you know, they have the clairvoyant abilities, the clairsentience, and can go forward or backward or you know, in time, things.
In time, yeah.
And it's just because those lines are activated in them.
Yeah. And, you know, apropos of what we were discussing there earlier on, you know, the ability to have those gifts, or we call them gifts, they're not gifts, they're our birthright, but the ability to have those is practically eliminated absolutely by the versions of Jesus that we have been fed, you know, for the last 1,500 years at least. We'll never be able to gain those abilities, which would be such a benefit to the human race, while we're believing in these crippling images of what Jesus was and came to do and said, etc. We've got the whole thing absolutely backwards.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, the image of God is so far off, because you know, if you fear God, or if you think it's this just jealous, wrathful tyrant that nobody can appease, you're never going to become one. And
how could you? Yeah.
Yeah. And my thing is, I feel, I mean, this is limited, but I see, you know, God as the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and dimensions throughout the multiverse. And you're not right. going to become one with that or merge with that if you have fear or guilt.
Oh, no, no.
Or worthiness.
No, excellent, excellent point, yeah. We always think, like following Michelangelo, of God is up in the clouds there wearing a white nightshirt.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then we use all these images sitting at the right hand of God as if God were a human being. I wrote an article one time, you know, that basically the way we think of God is as a human being enlarged. But, you know, whatever God is, he's certainly not a human being enlarged. He's more or less along the lines you've described there, you know, the force that's behind everything that exists. And, you know, wherever level that is, it's certainly there are no people with two arms and two legs walking around there.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of religious people have a very hard time realizing that the image of God that they hold goes back to the bearded gods, the Anunnaki, which were actually these. Yeah. And they can't take it to the next level and say, well, who created them?
You know,
did they have a mother? You know, where's the mother in there too? You know, they just can't go to the next level and reason it out.
No. And, you know, the whole system, unfortunately, is a web of inconsistencies and illogicalities, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just...
We're going nowhere while we hang on to those.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about... to me, it's very simple in its most unlimited understanding, which I can get. It's just pure, unconditional love and joy and the bliss. And the more you merge with that energy... the more you merge with the source, which is
right.
omnipresent. It's the creator within all creation. And we just have to limit, we have to get rid of all those little boxes and images feelings and emotions and everything that have been dumped on us. We have to transcend all that, all cultural, all religious programming to get into that unified field or that unity consciousness
which is what Jesus called love, that force that's coming from the creator.
Exactly.
And if we can get into the flow of that, then of course we have enormous power to create things. But if we're as you're saying there, if we're fearing God and all that other stuff, you know, you can forget about that. That's never going to happen until you've got that background. And unfortunately, all of those convictions, you know, about a fearful God, about our unworthiness and our sinfulness, etc., all these are negative subconscious programs. We don't even realize they're there. And the psychologists tell us that the trouble with these negative, disempowering subconscious programs is obviously we don't know they're there because they're subconscious. We're not even aware they're there. And the second most important thing about them is that if we do become aware that they're there, if we try to kick them out or get rid of them, it doesn't work because the programs are designed to strengthen themselves if they're attacked. Mm-hmm. There's a way to do it, and you know my book, Saving Jesus, that you mentioned, is fundamentally, it's not a book in the normal sense of the word. What it is an analysis of each of the disempowering programs that we have inherited from the misconceptions of Jesus' message. Because the psychologists tell us that the only way you can get rid of a disempowering program is to go back to where the roots of that program lay and see, and you have to do this personally. It doesn't work with someone telling you this. You have to see it yourself for this to work. So you go back to the roots of the programs, see where the programs justified by the facts of the situation way back, and if you see that they were not, then those subconscious programs start to fade away of their own accord. So what I did in my book was I took each of the disempowering programs that Christians as a whole in the world today believe about Jesus, and I went back and analyzed the earliest sources to see if those programs were justified, and of course they were not. I had a very highly placed churchman send me a message a couple of months ago that he didn't agree with my book on Jesus. So I sent back a message And I said, with the greatest respect, I'm not really interested in whether you agree or disagree with my book on Jesus. I said, I made no statement in that book without backing it up with evidence from the very most ancient sources that we have. So what I would be interested in hearing from you is, on what sources do you base the fact that you disagree with my book? That is what I would like to hear. Your sources. Of course, I was very confident to make that statement because I know there are no such sources.
Mm-hmm.
But there you have it.
Yeah, I get that a lot here, and I just tell people...
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do.
I tell people, you know, you're under the illusion that you have some authority in my life and that I actually care what you think. and so... You know, it's kind of, and then they start coming at me with all kinds of curse words and everything else. And I just say, you know, thank you for establishing your character and your ignorance. And,
but you know, that's it. When people react like that when they have no answer.
Yeah.
They try to kill the messenger, as the old phrase goes.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, I don't want to go there, but like in politics today, you know, you see these people, you go, and they're, all they do is slam and make assertions and assumptions and threats and yeah. You know, and bear false witness or whatever you want to call it. It's unbelievable. And I said, well, do you have a solution? Or how do you know that? what do you base your information on? You know, and they'll go CNN or MSNBC or something like that. And I go, God, you know, those guys are professional. They're pathological liars. Narcissistic liars. Why are you listening to them? But it's amazing. But I just go, okay, let's walk this back. Where did you get your information from? How do you know that's true? And have you really researched this? And do you know the real agenda? The real agenda. If you know the real agenda going on here, you can see who are the players and who's doing what. Who's creating heaven on earth and who's trying to keep us in hell? You know, it's real simple.
Oh, it's very simple, yeah. Unfortunately, very simple.
Yeah, yeah. It's and, you know, I also, too, I think people have lost that inner sensitivity that I call it your internal BS meter, that when these people come on the air, you should be able to just feel and sense their intent and what they're all about and change channels, you know. But it's like a frog in a pot. People have been doing it for so long, they've lost that ability.
They've lost any sensitivity at all to it. That's sadly all too true.
Yeah. Now, there does seem to be, and I'm sure you've noticed it, I don't know what you've heard about, but it seems to be just as there are these dark forces out there and they're sock puppets here on the earth, there's an incredible light force coming in right now that's seems to be multidimensional and the spiritually and technologically advanced off-worlders, our ancient ancestors, it seems like they're all returning at this point to help Earth in this amazing liberation and birth. Have you been looking into this?
Well, you know, I'm aware of this myself. There's certainly some major change coming. I mean, you can sense that energy around, and then, you know, you make contact with so many other people that are maybe for the first time they're beginning to express and think in ways that are aligned with that, which you never saw before, even though you may have known them for years. So I'm conscious of what's being said out there about a new time beginning to dawn here with different energies and powers coming into play that we haven't had before, with a view to doing something about the goddamn awful mess we're in, because we are, as a race, we are in a terrible mess. But I think you're right. There is some kind of a shift coming with a view to massive change for the better. And I think we'd all be very well advised if we sort of lined ourselves up with that, what's coming, so as to take the maximum advantage of it.
Yeah, I keep getting messages up here from the Pleiadians, which are have a major stock in our ancient history. You know, they were the progenitors of the Atlantis and Lemurian colonies, which kind of failed as well. But they've been talking about, you know, there's going to be a major reset, and that they're, you know, and they often talk about the real God, which is really interesting. And I said, you know, what's the real God? And they kept saying love, you know, God is love. Just focus on love. That's all you need to do. And then I said, well, do you have an ancient God that you worked with in the past? And they said, yes, there was a being that emulated that force or that life force or whatever. And I asked them if they could spell its name out, and they did, and it was Y-A-V-E-H.
So, okay.
which was quite interesting, which sounds a lot like you know, like Yahweh.
Yahweh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be Yahweh, but I guess they say W with the V or something. I'm not sure how that works.
They're probably not Germans.
Yeah, it was they spelled it out. Why that was? They said this is the phonetic pronunciation of it. Was Yahweh, and
keep going, Jim. Sorry.
They said, you know, it's the God of love and peace. It's the pure unconditional love and joy and bliss energy that they said if you need to give it a name or give it a frequency, that was what they used in the ancient past. But I think they've even gone beyond that.
Yeah, well, that's basically what we're talking about. You know, whatever name we put on it is something else. But there's a major difference between Jehovah and Yahweh.
Yeah.
And the Yahweh is the force that we're talking about, the force of love that's behind the whole creation. And it's obviously not a human being enlarged.
No.
But an entirely different being, the originating God, the source of all that exists. And this, you know, often you see so many people today who proclaim proudly that they're atheists or agnostics. They're not really atheists or agnostics. They're atheists of the type of God the religions are marketing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anybody with half a head on their shoulders could see those same problems. So we don't really have as many atheists and agnostics as we think. They're just revolting against the caricatures of God that have been marketed for so long and that have so many problems with them. But the trouble is they give up too easily and think that that version of God is the only one that could possibly be. And, of course, that's where they're dead wrong.
Yeah, I like it when people go, I don't believe in God. And, I always say, which God don't you believe in? You know, you've got the Anunnaki, you got the Egyptian gods, the Greek gods.
Yeah.
You've got all these different
gods. You've got quite a selection.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. James, could I come back to you on the Pleiadians and the Yahweh?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Could you tell me a little more about how you got this message and so on?
Well, they kept telling me over and over again, the real God, you know, is coming. They're talking about this force, this frequency and a force that's pressing hard on the planet right now. That's going to change the whole grid, everything. It's going to all the way down to the physical. And they kept talking about that. And so I just asked, I said, can you spell out its name? And so we actually used a divination technique. And we asked like two or three times to make sure I got it right. And they spelled it out, you know, Y-A-V-E-H.
V-E-H, yeah.
And,
oh, that's fascinating. That is fascinating.
Yeah, and the image I got was that there was this God being that became one with the one consciousness that was fully ascended up in a seventh on up dimensional being. I'm not sure where this guy is, and you know, he totally became one with the source, and that's what they determined. You know, they use that name to represent that.
Right. Now, this is a very unfair question and a really off-beam question. But did they give any idea of any time frame for this? Like, are we talking about a couple of years, or is it 100 years, or any indication at all?
Well, they've been giving me dates on waves. Like, on the 16th, a major wave came through, and they were behind that wave of energy. And I put it out on the internet, and I had all these people calling me back, and child counselors and things like that, youth counselors. And they said all these kids are having spontaneous awakenings, and it all happened around the 16th. So,
I don't know the precise dates, but I can list maybe 8 or 10 people who said the same thing to me around that same time. As I said, I don't remember what date now it would have occurred, but it was certainly, you know, just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. That's extremely interesting.
Another big one is coming through. I think it's January 23rd. Don't quote me on that. I'll look at it again. But I think it's on the 23rd. But what I see is each time one of these waves come through, we see huge changes, especially in the political arena and things like that. The old powers that were start to collapse. And I see it as a series of waves building up to that tipping point, you know, where eventually we're all going to be ready and then boom, you know, it's going to flip into a whole different dimension or something like that, a different world. But I never thought that, like, you know, when they were talking about the harmonic convergence, you know, that everybody was going to walk out and be in the fifth dimension and they maxed out their credit cards and sold their houses and did it, you know. And I said, don't quit your day job, you know, I don't think it's going to happen that fast. You know?
Yes. No, I don't think so. Oh, dear.
But it's exponentially ramping up, and I've been just seeing these waves are getting stronger and stronger, and the people that are not frequency specific to these waves that are still holding that consciousness of greed and power of the others and tyranny, they're not doing too well with these energies. They're not assimilating these energies, and it's just taking them out. They're dropping like flies right now.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I know. I've just observed that now that you mention it, you know, so many people that I caught were in the prime of life and they're just mysteriously popping off, dying, you know, I say like flies. And I'm sure it's connected with the fact that they can't take a new frequency that's coming. I mean, this is not sort of a moral superiority, because if you're open, you don't have to lord it over everyone to do this. But if you're open, that's all that's required.
Exactly.
And obviously, if your mind is blocked and closed against it, obviously it's not going to be very beneficial experience for you, and it may even mean that you've decided to pack it in. You can't take it.
Yeah. Well, there's so many wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions from past experience and all this programming, you know, and some of this goes into past life too as well. And so, you know, when people have not been doing their homework or not been on top of their own clearing process, they have the hardest time with this. And I know the kids just love this energy when it comes in. They're like multidimensional Geiger counters. They're just running all over the place, blissed out, you know, and so it's a lot of people that just, you know, have had a hard life or have gone through a lot of heavy stuff, and they're just not, they can't surrender or release it. And you know, they'll be okay. They'll be caught up on the other side and be able to do it again. But, you know, it's just a rough one with this energy. I mean, my own body has been going through all kinds of, you know, processes and programs, and there's, some mornings I go, God, I feel like I'm going to die tonight, and I go to sleep and I wake up. You feel emotions coming up, and you know, I've learned to just own it and heal it versus go around and projecting and blaming on others. But I see the people that do choose to, you know, do the emotional outbursts and project and blame on others, they're not doing too well either with these energies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's reflecting it all back into your own space. What you're projecting out. Yeah. No, I've noticed that myself now, because, you know, periodically I speak to groups here and there, and I've noticed a very major change in the whole tenor of those groups over the past 3 or 4 years, and especially in this year, that there is an entirely different mindset coming, an entirely different way of understanding and appreciating it, which was not there before. So I think this is all part of the same pattern that we're talking about. There is a change coming, and those who are open to it will float with it. It's like a surfer. You know, if you catch the wave, you go with it. If you're not, you're just going to be left behind.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen here a lot of people that were were, I mean, they thought I was Antichrist, or, you know, and now they're coming around and asking me questions. And I just said, look, I'm not, and they go, you'll never take Jesus away from us. And I go, I never said I'm not trying to take Jesus. I'm just trying to expand your version of Jesus and who he was and give you more expanded version of God.
Yeah, that's what my book is trying to do. I mean, as you said at the start, you know, I said, saving Jesus, someone had to do it, because that's what you're doing, and it's what I'm doing. In other words, that we're trying to get across what he was really talking about, as opposed to what people believe he was talking about.
Exactly, and I just see this whole thing. There's so many pulpits within the churches that are preaching fear and guilt and unworthiness and guilt if you don't tithe and, you know, keep them in a standard of living that they've been accustomed to and things. And I just see this over and over again. And everybody's given their power away to an external God, which is exactly the opposite of what Jesus taught.
Oh, yeah, absolutely the opposite. And, you know, it's really a pity that so many ministers of religion have really such a superficial grasp of what they're supposed to be preaching. Mm-hmm. They don't know the reasons for anything. They don't sense when a thing is off and when they're on, or they have no sense. They're just retailing something that has been learned off.
Exactly.
That's really a sad situation, but it's unfortunately very, very realistic as to what's going on. And then, of course, that's exactly the type of person that hasn't any answers, and that they think you're taking away everything, as you quoted there a minute ago. You know, I hope you leave us, Jesus, etc. So it's unfortunate that there isn't a little more insight in that kind of person, but I suppose their general education and upbringing never left any room for that kind of openness and understanding. It was all, you know, ready-made fit thing which you just marketed yourself without really understanding the background or insights behind it, and that's very sad.
Yeah, I think they need an abduction, a probe, and a near-death experience.
I presume you can arrange all those. We need 3 full days' notice, though, as opposed to. Yeah. There's probably quite a line.
we'll skip the probe. I'll skip that one. But there are negative ETs, just negative people out there. There's all kinds of stuff out there. But just, you know, my whole thing is focus on the benevolent ones and focus on love and joy and bliss. And if they don't exude that energy and they're not here to assist humanity and the earth in, you know, empowering the individual to make their own personal God connection, then I just cut them off. I just sit up.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, have you, I know that's not exactly your main concern to speak about, but have you noticed, in conjunction with this new openness that we talked about earlier, have you experienced any increased intensity in the negative forces as well?
Yeah, definitely. They have come up and reared their ugly heads. You know, they talk about the closer you get to nirvana, the more the demons rear their ugly heads. And I have seen a major influx of our coming up of these entities as the new energy comes in. But they're also being cleared out, and that's what we kind of specialize, clearing these energies out. And it's been just an overwhelming job for the past 2 years. It's been unbelievable, and now it's really lightening up. And
good.
Yeah, so there's been a huge cleanup of the unseen negative influences, you know, which are astral beings and kind of demonic negative ETs that. That's all being cleaned up, which is going to make things much, much nicer.
That should make things much nicer. Yeah, because as I mentioned there back at the beginning of our interview here, that, you know, the Anunnaki who engineered our bodies, half of them loved their creation, the other half abused their creation.
Yeah.
And one of the major factors in that was the entity Jehovah. Mm-hmm. And he lives off negative energy. So it's his business to make sure that the human race is powerless, conscious of their worthlessness and their sinfulness, and he feeds off that negative energy. Mm-hmm. So that's I suppose, something that the trend of so many religious movements gladden the heart of Jehovah.
Yeah, I think we need to switch gears and focus more on Yahweh, but also know that that's within you. It, you know, they said the temple is within, you know, go within. And, you know, they talk about an all-loving, all-forgiving God, and we need to pull that image in and get away from this other one and treat each other and all creation with love, and then we'll turn this planet around. We hit the end of the hour, unfortunately. I know we could probably go for two or three more hours at least. But what's the best way for people to get a hold of you and get a hold of your books and some of the other work that you're doing? Whoops. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I was about saying there, James, the best way is my website, michalledwith.com.
Okay.
That's probably the best way.
Great. Hey, I can't thank you enough, and Merry Christmas, and have a great new year, and I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much, James. It's always a great pleasure and honor to talk to you, as I did today, and I look forward to seeing you in July, as he said.
All right. Maybe sooner. You never know. I might be coming down to your area.
Very good. Wonderful. All the best.
All right.
Merry Christmas. Take
all
care.
Right, you too.
God bless. Bye-bye.
All right, James. Signing off. Have a great, happy holidays, and focus on love and joy and bliss, and pass it on to others. Good night.